ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. It is Wednesday, the 28th of February. I'm Sally Sara, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, staying put, monthly inflation remains unchanged, with higher costs for food, rent and insurance putting pressure on households. And it's Tilly's time. The Matildas take on Uzbekistan in Melbourne tonight in their bid to qualify for the Paris Olympics. But will they win without injured skipper Sam Kerr?
Everyone is still riding that high of the Matildas playing at home here at the World Cup last year. It was a cultural moment and it really shifted a change in the Australian psyche around women's sport. So I think it's going to take it to another level and should lift them to a convincing victory.
More than 30,000 Victorians in the state's west have been urged to leave their homes ahead of catastrophic fire conditions. There are fears that high temperatures and strong winds expected today could cause a bushfire northwest of Ballarat to spread, putting further homes at risk. It comes just 2 weeks after 44 homes were destroyed by bushfires in the Grampians town of Pomonal. Angus Randall reports.
It's been a nerve-wracking fortnight for residents of the Wimmera in Victoria's west. 2 weeks ago, catastrophic conditions sparked several large fires, and with similar conditions forecast today, many are again on alert. Mark Gunning is from the Country Fire Authority.
A really unstable day in the environment with possibilities of dry lightning starting fresh fires. Really strong winds. Today is a day where the ability of firefighters to control fires, if we don't get them very early when they're small, fires that get established will run for a long time and they will endanger communities and people's lives.
The recent fires destroyed 44 homes in Pomonal on the eastern side of the Grampians and one house in Dadswell Bridge to the north. Many residents fled to the regional centre of Stawell. Robert Haswell is the Northern Grampian Shire Mayor.
We have relief centres ready to open should the need arise. And these will be opened at the direction of the ICC for anyone who needs. But my message to our residents here is leave early. There's nothing to be gained by staying behind. Your life may depend on the decisions you make even before there is a fire.
With wind gusts of up to 80 kilometres per hour forecast, he says conditions are even worse than 2 weeks ago.
This will be, as they've said, the worst fire day in over 4 years. I've been here just over 10 years and I've never seen conditions like this. I thought it was bad 2 weeks ago when we had the fires, but this is warning bells going off everywhere.
One fire is already burning. A blaze that started at Bayandine, northwest of Ballarat last week, has been burning out of control for days. It's destroyed 6 homes so far. Ballarat Incident Controller Stephen Grant is preparing for a wind change coming through today that could push the fire closer towards Ballarat.
There are 22 aircraft available specifically for this fire and additional we can call on if we need them.
In total, more than 600 firefighters from Victoria and New South Wales have been deployed to the region. Luke Hegarty is from the State Incident Control Centre. He's encouraging residents in catastrophic risk areas to leave early if they feel unsafe.
We don't want people trying to move once a fire has started. We saw last week with the Bayandine fire that the Western Highway was shut really quickly because it was fairly close to the Western Highway and it started having impacts very quickly after the fire started, so we could see something like that happen again today.
Gianni Hodgson lives in Beaufort, near the Bayandine fire site. He's decided to stay.
Anxious, but also not too concerned. We've got pretty much several other people, neighbour-wise, also staying behind. So between the group of us, we're all got lookout points to look out for anything that could be a concern so we can call it in before it takes off. And we've just been driving up and down the dirt tracks around here, again, keeping an eye on anything that's smouldering, and if anything's getting larger, we'll just call in the CFA.
Victoria's not the only state on bushfire alert. In South Australia, 7 districts in the southeast, city and mid-north are facing extreme fire conditions. CFS State Duty Officer Ray Jackson says conditions in the east of the state may not ease until the evening.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the more significant days we've had so far this year. Significant hot, dry, windy conditions and a change in that as well. So, yeah, certainly a challenging day should something happen.
Residents in fire danger areas are advised to check their state's emergency services website and listen to ABC local radio for updates.
That's Angus Randall reporting there. In a blow to households struggling with the cost of living, the latest official data shows the rate of inflation has not budged from last month. The Bureau of Statistics figures show the monthly CPI indicator rose 3.4% in the 12 months to January, and that's unchanged from December. That means the costs of rent, food and insurance remain high. Our reporter David Taylor joins me now with more detail. David, inflation has been slow to drop, but it had been falling consistently for the past year. What's happened now?
Well, Sally, I think the items in the basket not necessarily affected by interest rate hikes from the Reserve Bank are proving sticky. The most significant contributors to the January annual increase were housing, so that's rent and property prices, up 4.6% over the year, food and non-alcoholic beverages up 4.4%, and insurance and financial services up 8.2%. So that's quite a significant increase. Now, Sally, offsetting or partially offsetting those annual increases, recreation and culture down 1.7%, and included in that was primarily due to holiday travel and accommodation down 7.1%, which is potentially good news for those who want to take a break from work. But also importantly, Sally, it's households saving less and some on perhaps lower incomes dipping into their savings, which continues to support demand in the economy. Remove that, and I think you'd get prices falling a lot more.
David, the Reserve Bank keeps a very close eye on these inflation numbers. What could it mean for interest rates?
Well, the Reserve Bank is unashamedly focused squarely on getting inflation back down to within its target band of between 2 and 3%. There's no budging on that. So these numbers don't actually look very good on the surface. But they do, Sally, I guess they look more encouraging for households if you strip out the more volatile items in the basket of the goods and services that are measured by the ABS in this statistical data set. Now, AMP's chief economist, Shane Oliver, says he remains confident inflation is on a downward trend.
So it's actually come in lower than expected, which I think is good news. For example, the trimmed mean, which is something the Reserve Bank looks at quite closely, also fell. So it's not just the headline rate coming down because of slower fuel prices, you know, weaker price rises for things like furniture. We're also seeing slower underlying inflation, which is good news.
Now, based on what you've just said, it sounds like you're not of the view that the Reserve Bank would treat this as a reason to raise interest rates again.
Look, there's no way the Reserve Bank would treat this as a reason to raise interest rates. I have a feeling this would be a little bit better than what they were expecting. But I think this is a good sign and certainly consistent with the Reserve Bank eventually being in a position sometime in the next 6 months to start cutting interest rates.
That's AMP's chief economist, Shane Oliver there. David, finally, accusations of price gouging, which of course fuels inflation, have been levelled at the big two supermarkets, Coles and Woolworths. The bosses of these companies will again front a Senate cost of living committee tomorrow in Canberra. What can we expect?
Well, hopefully some sort of explanation as to how their profits, which are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, we found that out of the past fortnight with Woolworths and Coles, are actually achieved. So the bosses, I suppose, will be defending accusations of price gouging, that is, setting their prices overly above the cost of putting those products on their shelves, and of course detailing how they're providing customers with value. And that's another way of saying how they're helping customers to get through, Sally, this cost of living crisis.
David Taylor, thank you very much. Well, there's been an outpouring love and grief for couple Luke Davies and Jessie Bird after two bodies were discovered at Bungonia, southwest of Sydney, yesterday. The New South Wales Police Commissioner's response to the alleged murders has been criticised, and police have been asked not to march in this year's Mardi Gras parade. Australian Federal Police officers have also decided not to march. But opinion in the community is divided on whether not inviting police to the event is the right call. Alison Schau reports.
At Taylor Square, in the heart of Sydney's LGBTIQ plus community, organisers are setting up for the 2024 Mardi Gras. But this year's Pride event comes as a community is in mourning.
It's been really shocking to me, absolutely shocking.
It is devastating. It's just really devastating to see, like, a repeat of history.
Everyone is hurt, like, all of us are, like, sad inside, so it's, like, it's not been a good Mardi Gras.
I think it's still, like, very traumatic for everyone, particularly, like, living around the area. It's pretty scary.
This morning, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese also paid tribute to Luke Davies and Jesse Baird.
I feel for the grieving of the family, the friends. They obviously were full of life because so many people interacted with them, and it's a really tough day for as well the queer community.
The family of Jesse Baird has visited the crime scene at a property in Bungonia, 2 hours south of Sydney, where yesterday police found two bodies in surf bags.
We strongly believe they are the remains of Jesse and Luke.
That's New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb.
Overnight, the remains have been moved to the morgue at Lidcombe, where at some point in the next few days they'll undergo a post-mortem examination.
The commissioner has come under fire for her handling of the investigation, accused of hiding from the media over the weekend, describing the murders as a crime of passion and being insensitive when making a reference to a Taylor Swift lyric. She's apologised, today saying it's been a learning experience.
That was a comment not related to any of this, and it's and I apologise if I upset people. My job is to support the police officers, and as I said, working with all of our communities, but particularly the LGBTQ plus community, to restore what is apparent is a fractured relationship, and it's a very raw time for them.
That tension has led to the Mardi Gras board asking police not to participate in this year's parade, a decision that's been met with divided opinion.
I think that the police need to respect the LGBTI community, so if that's what they wish, then they should really be, you know, respectful to help heal the community.
I wouldn't mind them marching.
I think just given what's happened, like, it's probably just not right for them to be a part of something.
They know marching is a good way because I feel like even if they do, people are going to be like, you know, like booing or like saying stuff, screaming stuff, maybe throwing stuff, and there's going to like maybe bring another problem.
Local resident Mike Bogle says he's saddened by the decision.
I think it's counterproductive. I've been spent years building up a relationship between the two, the police and the lesbian gay community, and sort of going backwards. I'm sad, really.
Mardi Gras representatives met with the police commissioner yesterday to continue discussions about participating, and those conversations are expected to continue today. Commissioner Karen Webb says she hasn't ruled out the idea of police marching out of uniform.
We haven't agreed on anything yet. We had great conversations yesterday. Those conversations will be ongoing, and I look forward to following that through in the next few days.
That's New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb, ending that report from Alison Schau. You're listening to The World Today. The federal government has released exposure draft legislation to simplify the century-old system to administer veterans' entitlements. Currently, veterans and their families often have to deal with three different sets of rules to determine their claims. The government is planning to consolidate the laws into one, but it's already missed a deadline set out by the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide to implement the change. Dr. Glenn Kolomitz is a lawyer, defence analyst and veteran. He says reform is long overdue.
That's a very good thing. I and many others were pressing for what we call harmonisation of these three legislative regimes into one more workable package of legislation. Because quite frankly, it's been a nightmare since they went from one piece of veterans legislation to three. So it is a good thing, yes.
So some veterans, including yourself, you would get caught in all three of those systems because your service spanned across them. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Because I had service going back a long way, and the fact that I deployed overseas a few times, my service does span all three. And there are quite a number of, I could say, older veterans like myself, but also some younger veterans who are caught up in this nightmarish regime.
So you're not only having to deal with one set of rules and processes, but three.
Yeah, that's right. Now, look, I'll give you an example how complicated it is. I'm a lawyer, and I've practiced in this space. and trying to work through my own claims were really difficult. So I used to ask myself, if I'm finding it hard, how is a young soldier who hasn't practiced law and he leaves the army or leaves defence and has to navigate their way through this this regime, how are they going to deal with it?
A lot of this pressure, of course, is coming from the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide. Is there a hope in the veteran community and the legal community dealing with this that the Royal Commission will, its recommendations when we get those, will push further change in this area?
Absolutely there is. And I'm supremely, I've appeared for veterans as council representing in front of the Royal Commission, and I've assisted other veterans work their way through it. And I'm supremely confident that they will produce very good, solid recommendations and solid findings. I think they're doing an amazing job led by Nick Keldis. So the issue is, will government have the political will to implement, to act on the findings, implement the recommendations, and then will the departments be in a position to then act on government's direction and not push back against it?
And we haven't had a clear answer yet on whether an interim body will be established to make sure that the recommendations will actually be implemented.
Yeah, that's right. And I've been saying this for many years, even when we were first advocating for a Royal Commission. I was saying that first you have a Royal Commission to take the Band-Aid off the wound, and then you have a standing commission, like a permanent commission, to then keep the ongoing changes happening, implement the recommendations and keep improving on what comes out of the Royal Commission.
How would you describe the level of frustration for some veterans who've been stuck in this system and some indeed who have walked away? They've just had a gutful, they've had enough of it.
Well, I know for a fact that trying to work their way through this process has contributed to self-harm of some veterans, including taking their own lives. We've had veterans and who were clutching their DVA paperwork when they've self-harmed. So there's tangible evidence that it has had a devastating effect, and the Royal Commission's heard that evidence. And so look, the level of frustration has been, and I suspect continues to be, enormous.
That's lawyer, defence analyst and veteran Dr. Glenn Kolomitz. And if you're a current or former ADF member and this story's raised concerns for you or someone you know, you can contact Open Arms on 1-800-011-046. US President Joe Biden says he hopes to see a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas soon if a hostage deal is agreed. President Biden has even suggested that a ceasefire could allow for a two-state solution to be drawn up, something that's been immediately rejected by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Aid groups say famine in Gaza is imminent, with close to 2 million people now displaced because of the conflict. Rachel Mealy reports.
Thousands of Palestinians cram into a narrow, sandy strip of beach. Above, planes from Jordan and Qatar drop aid onto the land and into the sea. This is the only help people in northern Gaza are getting right now. This woman describes the plight of many. We came here because we have no flour. There's no food, no water, because of the hunger, she says. Our homes were bombed. Where are we supposed to go? Aid groups say their trucks are being attacked by the Israeli military and hungry hordes of people. Israel denies it's targeting convoys. Ramesh Rajasingham, a senior UN aid official, told the UN Security Council the situation in Gaza is dire, with more than 500,000 people one step away from famine.
Very little will be possible while hostilities continue and while there is a risk that they will spread into the overcrowded areas of south of Gaza. We therefore reiterate our call for a ceasefire.
The US president is optimistic that a temporary ceasefire can be achieved by the time the Muslim holy month of Ramadan begins on the 10th of March. But Joe Biden says the deal to halt fighting can only happen if Hamas agrees to release Israeli hostages.
There is a path forward. The hostages being held must be released. And if we've got at least a principle agreement, there'll be a ceasefire while that takes place. Ramadan's coming up, and there's been an agreement by the Israelis that they would not engage in activities during Ramadan as well, in order to give us time to get all the hostages out.
The US president says the pause would allow room for peace talks between the two sides.
So there's a process underway that I think if we get that temporary ceasefire, we're going to be able to move in a direction where we can change the dynamic and not have a two-state solution immediately, but a process to get to a two-state solution.
But President Biden's optimism about peace isn't shared by Israel or by Hamas. A Hamas spokesman has called President Biden's comments premature. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continues to speak of the war continuing even after a possible ceasefire.
Since the beginning of the war, I've been leading a political campaign aiming to curb the pressures seeking to end the war before its time, and on the other hand, to gain support for Israel.
Akiva Eldar is a veteran journalist and political analyst. He says both Biden and Netanyahu have their own political survival in mind in pushing their case for or against a ceasefire.
It seems that there is one person who is very interested and he has a vital interest in the agreement, and this is President Biden. But it looks like Netanyahu is 180 degrees from him.
That's Akiva Eldar, veteran journalist and political analyst, ending that report from Rachel Mealy. Well, tonight the Matildas will take on Uzbekistan in Melbourne in a bid to qualify for the 2024 Paris Olympics. Australia won 3-0 in the first match in the Uzbek capital Tashkent on Saturday night. Tonight the Tillies will kick off at 8pm in front of a home crowd of more than 50,000 fans at Docklands Stadium. So, can the Matildas make it to the Olympics without the injured captain and striker Sam Kerr? Amanda Shalala is deputy editor of ABC Sport.
If they win this match tonight, they are automatically through to the Olympics. Even if they draw, they will still go through. But if they lose, they could still go through. It depends on how many goals Uzbekistan wins by. So, for example, if Uzbekistan won 1-0, then the Matildas overall on both ties would be winning 3-1. So I think that is an unlikely scenario, though. Uzbekistan winning, the Matildas are definitely the strong favourites for this one, particularly being at home for this clash and being a much high-ranked team.
They took their time a little bit on Saturday night, the Matildas in Uzbekistan. What did you think of that?
They had about 26 shots on target but only scored 3 goals, which is not good for them, and they know they definitely have to improve. They scored all 3 goals in the last 10 minutes or so of the game, the first one coming through Michelle Heyman, who came back after a few years in the wilderness in international retirement, so she has shown her worth and the value of having a striker with killer instinct. So I think she could expect to play another role tonight, but they've got to be a lot better.
The crowd, will that be an advantage to them? Pressure, what will that be? And it's a pretty tight turnaround. They were only playing Saturday night in Uzbekistan in light snow, and now they're going to be in Melbourne in a stinking hot day.
There were about 2,500 people in Tashkent watching that match. Tonight at Docklands in Melbourne, there'll be over 50,000 people, a capacity crowd. And that is extraordinary for this sort of match. This isn't tournament football. We're not in a World Cup or an Asian Cup, which is where you typically expect the massive crowds. But it is still a very important game. So I think the crowd will play a huge part. Everyone is still riding that high of the Matildas playing at home here at the World Cup last year. It was a cultural moment and it really shifted a change in the Australian psyche around women's sport and how we support it. So I think it's going to take it to another level and should lift them to a convincing victory.
So obviously they're without the captain Sam Kerr due to injury. Have they figured out yet how they reconfigure themselves to score?
No, is the simple answer. So we saw Emily Van Egmond trying to fill the void a little bit in that first match and it didn't really work too well. That's why I think Michelle Heyman could be the one potentially to step up more tonight and perhaps get a berth in the starting side as well to try and really provide that out-and-out striker up front who knows how to score goals, who's been there, done that before. We saw Mary Fowler as well score a great goal in that first leg, and every time she steps out there, she's just coming into her own and growing more and more. And really, a lot of people are thinking she has the potential to be an even bigger superstar.
What are you getting a sense of the support for the Matildas? Is it still at that incredible high? We saw during the week that the goalkeepers' jerseys were released, and I had a look online before, they're just completely sold out.
So this was a big talking point during the World Cup, is that you could buy jerseys for all the different teams and players, but you couldn't buy goalkeeper jerseys. And everyone was really annoyed about that. So finally, Australia's Minister of Defence, Mackenzie Arnold. You can buy her jersey and it's, yeah, selling like hotcakes, absolutely. So it's really good to see that for every single player on the field, there is definitely still that level of support.
Well, I'll have my number 16, Hayley Rasso, on when I'm watching them. Amanda, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ali.
That's Amanda Shalala, Deputy Editor of ABC Sport. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Sally Sara. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. The board of the Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras has asked police not to march this weekend. It comes on a difficult week for the force after a senior constable was charged with the alleged murder of Sydney couple Jesse Baird and Luke Davies. But police participation in the event has long caused controversy. Today, we unpack why. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.